Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Boy, are you ever. And I'm so glad to be here.
Really?
Yes, I am.
More so today than any other day? Why today?
More so today than
because
yesterday.
Of our incredibly talented guests?
Yes,
is that
indeed.
It?
Yes,
and
indeed.
The cards that they are holding up telling you to be more excited than you normally are? Is that it?
Underwhelming.
No, I am excited because they are spectacular. And we're going to be talking about that later in the hour. So,
yes.
Yeah, I'm just glad to be alive today.
So. Are you?
Yes,
even with the humidity, as they say?
What is the humidity?
The
humidity.
It's the humidity.
The humidity. Okay.
Don't mean to lose you in the jargon there. Thank our sponsors. Thank
yes,
the people
indeed.
Who pay the bills.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Nice idea.
Support those people.
Yeah, they're lovely people.
Mike Napoli over at Performing Arts Live is such a
class,
great supporter.
Class act.
And a paisan as well.
Yes, he is.
Mr. Napoli. Nice guy. You take care of that thing for me, Michael?
Yeah, I did.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I did, Paul.
Okay. Beautiful thing.
There you go.
Okay, sorry.
Cameron McIntosh's spectacular new production of Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Phantom of the Opera made its Los Angeles premiere recently here at the Hollywood Pantages Theater.
And I'm sorry, this is Phantom of the what? I just haven't heard this
opera.
One, right?
Yeah, it's
how many years?
27.
86?
27
unbelievable.
Years. Yeah.
Most profitable show in history,
that's
right?
That's right. $6 billion
in
revenue.
$6 billion.
$6 billion. Yes.
I'm in the wrong business.
Yeah.
Wrong business.
Telling me. But it will continue on stage at the... What was that? It will continue on stage at the Pantages Theater through August 2nd. And it is a newly reinvented staging and stunning scenic design. This new version of Phantom is performed by a cast and orchestra of 52, making this one of the largest productions on tour in North America. And we are delighted to have the two stars from that production with us today, joining us in studio and playing the roles of the Phantom and Christine, respectively. Please welcome Chris Mann and Katie Travis.
Hi.
Hello, guys.
Welcome.
Yes,
so glad
that
to
applause
have
cut
here.
Off really abruptly.
Sometimes
your audience
they,
is very well trained.
Just don't listen. I need a whip. I need a whip sound effect. Is what
but
I need.
They're nice people. They're nice people.
They are.
You
they're
know,
great.
Having seen
we feed them occasionally.
Well, you brought them. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, right. You had the bus pull up.
Well, before we talk though to Chris and Katie, Paul, I just wanted to ask you, how was your week? I know you opened in August Osage County
through our second weekend. Yes, yeah. Standing O's, really doing wonderful. Very. I don't have a big part in it. I'm mm-hmm. the sheriff, but I do get to kiss the beautiful Susan Angelo, which I'm very happy about.
I thought you were going to say Susan Anton.
Well, that's right. Backstage, but don't bring that up because, okay. You know, I have to observe the 500 yards
all right.
Dictated by the court.
For those of you who know who Susan Anton is.
Yes, for those of you who know. No, we all know
so
Susan
a good
Anton.
Week, and we're talking about humidity. And,
went
and,
well, yes.
You're in an outdoor amphitheater.
And we've had three reviews so far. They've all been love letters, so we've been very happy about that. We're waiting on the LA Times, fingers crossed, for today or tomorrow, but... you know, it's just a great show. You can't, I mean, Pulitzer Prize winning script.
Yeah.
You got Ellen Gear, you got Willow Gear, you got Susan Angelo, a number of other people in the cast. Just really happy to be there. And it was my second week teaching at UCLA, the
oh, yes.
acting
in right.
Fundamentals of Acting for the UCLA Extension. And I love every one of my students. They're just wonderful people.
20, I was going to ask you about that.
20 of them, and they're just wonderful people, and we're having a ball.
There are. Or do you find as a mm-hmm. teacher of theater that these students that you've inherited, basically, are there some that are in a place that's just more natural than others?
Or, well, I didn't inherit them. I mean, they're starting with me. It's the whole semester. I took over the job, but they haven't been at it.
Sure.
Well, the most interesting thing is that so many of them are from different countries.
Mm-hmm.
So while their English skills are great, of my 20 students, only five are native, have English as a first language. The other are from Greece and from... so many Tunisia and Israel and mm-hmm. so many different people. Mm-hmm. So that's a great cross cultural thing, and they're teaching me as hopefully as much as I'm teaching them. So or the other way around.
That's an awesome thing.
But no,
to do.
It was great. It's been great. How was your week?
Good, very good. You know, we had a big opening at the club last Sunday with Candy Milo, who is a theatrical force here in Los Angeles.
Force of nature.
Force of nature. Yes, she is. She is quite a dynamic performer. And a show that she brought in with Michael Orland, who is a friend of our program, who is the associate musical director American Idol.
Yeah.
And a kick-ass band and backup singer. And, 75-minute show that just took the roof off the place. Her crowd was screaming through this.
Which you wouldn't expect, because she's such a shy, retiring type. She's quiet, fragile little flower, that
she
Candy
is
Milo.
A very, a woman who has a very innate sense of humor. And kind of self-deprecating often, but she just throws it out there. And she sings to beat the bejesus.
Well, really. I know that you can't, you don't like to use the word, and we shouldn't use the word on the air, but a great indicator of that is the title of her show,
yes,
which we'll edit for our rating on iTunes.
Yes.
But it's basically the title of the show is If She Can Tap, You're Effed.
Yes,
basically,
yes.
Which is a story of her auditioning for Annie, wasn't
well,
it?
Well, her father said that to her after the girl preceding her
went
in to audition for the role.
If she could
Annie.
Tap, you're fucked. And
right.
I can say
exactly.
Michael doesn't like the word, but I use it far more frequently than he
It is a funny story, I must say. But thanks for asking. That was a wonderful evening, and people are still writing about it on the Facebook. So.
On the Faccio di Libro?
Exactly.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention that we do have a celebrity guest today, too.
Oh, who is
just
that?
Be chiming in on occasion. Today we have Jack Black.
Oh.
Yes.
And
so,
is he coming up? Or
what are you doing?
Yeah, so thank you. He's here. Yeah, he's good.
Don't you have something to say?
Yes, we do. We're just going to get started now.
Right off the bat.
Thank you so much. Okay, our first guest rose to fame as Christina Aguilera's finalist on NBC's The Voice. Since then, his debut album, Roads, hit number one on Billboard's Heatseekers chart, and he starred in his own PBS television special, A Man for All Seasons. Mm. That man would have two ends, as you will find.
Clever as that is.
I did not title that.
I wasn't judging. I just read what they give me, man. He has performed the National Sympathy for President Obama, and with two M's, at Christmas at Rockefeller Center, and headlined his own symphony tour across the country. From Wichita, Kansas, he holds a vocal performance degree from Vanderbilt University, and you may have seen him on Ellen, Today, Conan, Jay Leno, or Glee, but we can guarantee you can see him live on stage in what he calls his dream role as the man behind the mask. Please welcome Mr. Chris Mann.
Thank you.
Howdy.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, there's that audience again.
There you go.
So he's so happy because he didn't have to go very far.
He didn't
come to the studio.
Yeah. Well, we can't give away where he lives. He may have a stalker or something.
No, we'll just say
it's in the vicinity.
Yeah, it's in the vicinity. It's in the valley.
It's in the valley.
The greater valley area.
Yeah.
Which is great.
The magic is great. That is the valley.
That's right.
Yyes. I live in Tarzana myself.
And thank you for coming in on a day where you actually have to work this evening.
Okay. Thank you.
We really appreciate that. And Paul just saw the show last night. I was at your opening.
Tuesday.
I saw it.
A couple days ago.
Yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah,
I was at the opening, and boy, oh boy, what a phenomenal evening of theater that was.
Thank
and
you.
You too, seriously, not just because you're sitting here with us, but when you open your mouths to sing, it is thrilling. I mean, beyond thrilling, really, especially you just being
she's tiny.
Yes, a tiny size. And it comes, this amazing voice comes out of her.
Yeah.
And you who carry this show throughout when you come out, it's just amazing.
Thank you. We appreciate that very much.
Yeah, we do.
It's very, very exciting. You must know that and certainly been told that many, many times. But from an audience perspective, it's just very, it's so much to take in. There's so much to watch. Watching this show, the beauty of the sets, the lighting, you know,
the other thing too is that a venue as gorgeous as the Pantages, which
truly,
I will say that is the prettiest house in town. It's an absolutely beautiful venue, as you two know. It's this particular show is almost like an extension of that space.
Sure.
The new sets, the redesigned sets, so ornate, so rich that you just feel like, you know, because there is a I don't want to say there's a spookiness to the Pantages, because it's not that it's spooky, but there's a history. history. There's a very rich history there. And you feel the ghosts when you walk through there. You feel it.
We love coming to a new city and walking in, out on stage for the first time for soundcheck and having that feeling where we see that this show just fits into that space. Because it doesn't always. Like, sometimes the house is modern or sometimes the house is older. But when it's like the Pantages, it feels like we've built the entire thing just for us. And it does make the story that much more fun.
Right.
Sure. And in my dressing room, there's actually a cabinet in the bathroom that all of these performers who have performed there have signed the cabinet.
Oh, really?
And it was really special to find that and uncover it because it sort of is a very visual reminder of all of these amazing people who have been there.
And do you remember some of the names?
It's a lot of, Lin-Manuel Miranda, John Larroquette, Katie Rose Clark, Megan Hilty, Trista Moldovans, a lot of Phantoms and Christines. So people that I had, you know, studying to audition for this, I had watched a lot of their videos and such. And so it's cool to, I touched the table. I wasn't supposed to touch the table.
It's okay.
Anyway, it's
give
cool.
Give her a break.
Say anything. She just saw my eyes darting down. You know, I would say, funny you mentioned that, the other people doing the show, because Michael, I don't know if you know, that I was supposed to actually do this production of Phantom.
You were.
I had a conflict.
Really?
Oh, thank you.
I did.
I'm so happy about that.
What was the conflict?
I can't sing or dance.
Sorry. Ouch.
I do it every show.
I know.
God forbid. So in terms of this climate that you're walking out on and walking out into and the vibe of the show, we were talking before we went on the air about the history of the show. And even though this is a newly reimagined version of it, do you feel that anticipation from the crowd, especially when you go out there? I mean, they're obviously there to see a show, but can you tell by the way the songs are received or the way the scenes are received, how many veterans you have in the house and how many newbies you have? Is that something that's discernible to you as performers?
Well, I don't know about newbies versus veterans, mm-hmm. but you can tell really quickly. I don't know. You might be able to help me put this together, but how like stoked that audience is.
Right.
And for example, our opening night in LA, as soon as the announcement that the show was about to begin started, the audience started clapping. And you know that you got a great audience when they're just clapping from the start. They might be drunk, but they're probably just excited to see the show.
Happy. We say happy.
They're happy. Yeah. They might be happy.
Lighthearted.
And that's great. And that puts us, at least for me, I'm sure for you, but puts us at ease immediately to know that we have a crowd that is really excited to be there.
Yeah. It definitely feeds us, you know, and you do the show every day, sometimes twice a day. And so to have an audience that's excited to be there and you can hear it, it amps us up, you know, and we do our best every day. But sometimes when there's a great audience, it helps the
oh, yeah.
And I think
it's
that might
audio adrenaline.
For sure.
Totally.
For sure.
And that reaction might actually, on what you're saying, I never really put it together, but that could be veterans because they're there. They are that excited and they know what's coming.
That anticipatory.
So maybe that is what it is.
That's what I've always thought, that the hardest job in this business is understudy. And the reason for that is when they hear that sort of murmur when the announcement happens, they're going up against the exact opposite of that. Because now they have to go out and prove themselves because they're going to be quote unquote judged more. And we never really praise understudies enough. And I think
praise ours all the time.
We do.
Our understudies are amazing. In fact, mine went on last night for me. They always do an incredible job.
They do.
Alan went on last night.
And the swings especially, too. They're amazing people who learned so many different tracks in the show. And it's a really specific kind of memory, one of which I sometimes wonder if I could do. And so they're really talented. Yeah.
They're like
people.
The great, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. They're the great utility players. They can do, mm-hmm. they do everything.
And we even have swings and understudies that have been, you know, title characters, principals in other productions on Broadway. And that's when I came into this show, I was so blown away in my ignorance about the sort of credentials of every member of our company and the talent level of them. It's ridiculous. Hmm. So, yeah, when one of us goes out, it's fine. The show's in good hands.
Yep.
Have either of you understudied before?
I have not. No.
I have. I have.
But I don't want to talk about it.
No. I will. No. Oh, my God. No.
Just don't hit the table, okay? Say whatever you want.
Okay.
Just
I won't don't hit the table.
Shaking fist.
I was the understudy for In Scrooge the Musical, The Ghost of Christmas Past, at the Fireside Theater in Wisconsin, which, like, gave me my first professional start. And I understudied roles there. And it was a great opportunity because I could sort of work under other people and sort of learn from them, you know, and I did that for years, and I learned under a lot of really amazing, not even under, but learned from a lot of amazing performers, you know, in Wisconsin, and I could be close to my family in Michigan, and so it was a great time for me, for sure.
It's not only, I mean, I'm sure it was, but the other thing, too, is that it empowers you so much. You do something like that where you get thrown on the ice with very few rehearsals and things like that, and you become 6'10 and bulletproof as a performer. You just really do just get very, very strong, and I think I think all actors, like all actors should sit in on the audition process. All actors should understudy at some point in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Have either of you had an understudy that you felt a little all about Eve with, you know, that was really looking at you hard to
take you out?
Yeah.
You know, pretty much. I haven't. I mean, you know, I think, like, it's just really important, especially in this company, in this situation, because I do six of the shows a week because Christine is such a vocally demanding role, as is the Phantom, but I'm lucky that I have this opportunity to do six shows a week. And
versus eight is what she means.
Versus eight, which we do. And there's a wonderful girl, Celia, who does two of the shows, and she's incredible. And then there's another Christine who sort of covers us both. So moral of the story is we sort of work as a team, which is just really nice. And it's just really important because there are three girls doing the same role, and we all do it a little differently. And we're all great. I mean, I'd like to think I'm great. We're all great. And that's the cool part, is that we can be friends and supportive of our differences. And
and you're not blindly parroting
no.
you.
Oh,
they're
no.
making
no.
it their
but
own.
I can speak directly to that as the guy who plays opposite all three of them, is that it's a different show, and it's really fun. Mm-hmm. And I know that when Krista
keeps
goes,
you on your toes a little bit?
Well, I mean, sure, but it just freshens it up for us because we do it. You know, like I said, we've been in the show 6 months, so we've done it over 200 times. And it's just fun. Do you get a change of scenery? Just like when I call out, I'm sure that there's people in the cast that are like, oh, we got to do something different tonight with Alan or Eric. But I enjoy it because all three girls make their own choices as Christine, and that always makes it just a little bit different.
Well, and keeps you sharp.
Sure.
You know, there's no mailing it in. There's no mailing it in with this show anyway, but no. I mean, you can't fall into old habits because you know.
Mailing it in. I have never heard that phrase. I've heard
phoning it in.
Yeah.
Mailing it in is even slower.
Yeah, exactly. Email the email.
That's
mailing
even
it
less.
No, mailing it.
We're talking snail mail.
No, we used to actually make jokes about this. Is that you? Actually, I forgot that this was a joke that we used to share. It was like you didn't basically talk to people. Their performance was so laid back that they didn't phone it in. They mailed it in. That's
it is.
Okay,
we're learning.
Oh, I'd be interested to hear Jack Black's comment on this. What do you think about this, Jack?
And I'm going to go with a fillet of fish sandwich.
Okay, he's not really.
Since that has less calories because it's fish.
It's like in a restaurant.
Any attention to
the listening to this interview?
Nerve.
I got to ask you something, Chris, because I used to struggle with anxiety and stage fright. I I made it to be about 36,
right,
which was last year.
Oh, happy birthday.
It. And I hit about 36, 37, and all of a sudden, completely out of the blue, totally incapacitating stage fright, anxiety, all this stuff. And I've since dealt with it, and happily without medication, I dealt with it other ways. And
send me their number.
It's resolved. <your show. laughs> but I'm curious about something like this for both of you, but specifically we're talking to you first. Something along the lines of the voice.
Yeah.
Something like that is just has so many eyes on you. How do you – do you have a particular process? Was it just as nerve-wracking as one would imagine, or do you sort of get in a zone because it's primarily a TV show? Is the live performance aspect as much as, say, a show like this would be?
Yeah, I get asked this a lot, and it is interesting. You know, is it more?
I think a lot of people are curious.
Is it more nerve-wracking to be the Phantom or to have done something like The Voice? Yeah. And it's sort of a. I have a couple ways to answer this question. I will never have ever been more nervous than that blind audition for The Voice. Like, I was physically, I was ready to, it was like nauseating, literally. Because a couple things. It's, and I've been performing my whole life and been on tour and done and whatever. And but this moment, the producers, it's a reality show, so they definitely poke you and prod you and set you up to be super hyper emotional so that you go out there and whatever happens, it's raw and over the top. And that's
they're
sort
creating
of the TV.
Television. Yeah, they're creating television.
But it works, and it totally gets in your head and your psyche. So on top of – so that's one element. Plus, it's just a crazy experience, and you're going out and whatever. So – but because of that experience, it's I will never be as nervous ever again.
Right.
So the thing that I use as an example later is when I sang for the president, I was like totally not nervous.
Yeah.
Well, because I've been that. However, the Phantom, I'm nervous again because the expectation, like you said, this is a show that's been around for 27 years. People have very strong connections. They've seen, you know, there haven't been that many Phantoms out there, but they all know who they are, and they compare us and contrast us. And so I feel a lot of responsibility every night. And it is a hard show to sing because the Phantom is a rangy part and the guy's really angry. So it takes a lot out of you. But Katie and I, some nights, depending on how we feel, we look at each other and we might laugh before we go out or something, or like depending on how we feel. And you help me out when I'm feeling under, and I think vice versa when we need that little bit of boost, energy or confidence, or just to like shrug it off. But it's an experience that I'll never forget.
Well, I'm happy to hear you say that about getting nervous again, and because we have so many young people who are starting out in the business that are listeners on the show, it's important to stress to them that a little bit of fear is good. I mean, it focuses you, and you know, it's also what you name it. You can name it nervousness, or you can name it excitement, depending on how you're going to do that. But you still have a little bit of fear because it matters to you. And
it does matter to me. And this is a part, you know, it's when I was on The Voice, it was really kind of at the peak of a show, and I was lucky enough to be on the debut episode that was right after the Super Bowl, and 37 million people watched, and it was at the time
that's
the highest rated.
37 million?
And no, not that much. It was the highest rated show ever at the time. And you get criticized. When you're being watched by that many people, you're kind of public domain for everyone. Yeah. And there's some similarity to playing the most iconic male role in music theater, where you're just sort of, you're a fair game.
Of course, yeah.
So I always, and that's like another thing if you're a young, aspiring performer, is like that whole thick skin speech is real. Like, you have to sort of be confident in yourself and also just take it with a grain of salt. Wow. And it's an exciting part of the job, but it also is kind of like my least favorite part of the job.
Well, and also arts are like sports, and that is that everyone who's watching is better at it than you.
I know.
Everyone who's sitting in the dark or watching on TV, arts, sports, the same thing. Oh, well, he should have this, or I would have this, or why didn't he this? Yeah. It's like, God, and have another bowl of chips and stay home.
You know, before you do that, I want to ask Chris something, but being around Christine Team Christine,
sure.
Being on her team, how was that?
It was,
I mean, with
great.
Her presence and
yeah, I mean, she's a force of nature, and I went into the audition process wanting to be on her team with the full game plan to sort of like do the classical crossover thing and sing the prayer with her, and that's how I went into the moment, and that's what happened. So it was a really awesome experience to get to do that with her. I'm still in touch with her, and she's, you know, she sang on my debut record, Rose.
Well, she's right here, fantastic.
And she's here. She follows me everywhere. It's really weird. I mean, just go away.
A little too much, right?
So, but it was cool.
Has she come to see you in the show yet?
She hasn't yet. She just had a baby.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But you know, we're here for a lot longer. But we'll see. But I don't blame her for, you know, prioritizing and say like,
well, she could just put the baby in her purse.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Come on, let's go.
How exciting! What an exciting life you are leading at this point in time, and certainly should be being as talented. As
part of that excitement is the show that we're talking about, The Phantom of the Opera, and we want to tell people how they can get tickets for this production. Of course, there's always the HollywoodPantages.com or Ticketmaster.com, or you can call the box office 6233. Go to the box office rather, 6233 Hollywood Boulevard, and check it out there. And or you can call 800-982-2787. That's 800-982-2787. 7. And we also want to stress that it's selling very, very well. And the weekends can be filling up a little faster than others. But Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, you're probably a little more likely to get better seats up closer on those nights rather than the weekends.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And I like those nights better because it's a little less manic. It's a little less
crazy. On the streets of Hollywood.
On the streets of Hollywood.
Right, yes. In the heart of Hollywood. That was fun for people that have never been there.
Can I tell you a funny story?
That
you
just reminded me of.
That's
why we're here.
Fun. Don't tell it too fun.
It may be funny to no one but me. But so the other, and I probably shouldn't tell the story at all, but you mentioned the box office, The Pantages, and the other day, in between shows, I stay in makeup. So I'm in my full-on deformity prosthetic with the wig, and I look crazy. But I put on, like, gym shorts and Crocs and walk around theater like I'm a normal person, but I look like I'm insane. So I have friends that are coming to the show because I live in L.A., and I needed to switch somebody's tickets, and so I thought, well, I'll just go to the box office. I didn't realize the box office was outside on Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah. And they're very protective of my makeup. They don't want anyone to see it. So
the box office?
Probably Andrew Lloyd Webber, I would imagine, more so.
You probably had to sign something. But.
So I find myself going, I'm like hugging the wall outside because the security guard let me outside.
Which also looks weird.
All weird. I'm hugging the wall so that no one on Hollywood Boulevard will see this character out there. And I creep around and I tap on the glass of the box office. I'm like, hey you guys, and then I like ran back to behind the wall so no one would see me, and then I came back around. Imagine a fully deformed face,
right.
And I'm like, hey, can I talk to you about some tickets? They looked at me like I was crazy, and I hugged the wall, and no one said anything. I came back around, I'm like, hello, and I said, you guys know I'm in the show, right? I mean, I'm fully, clearly I'm in the show. And they go, I'm sorry, we don't know who you are, we can't help you. And I was like, wait, what? So I went back hiding, and so I said, well, can you just tell me what's best available on like Tuesday? So I'm doing the full on transaction as the Phantom in gym shorts with the box office because they wouldn't. They thought
Wednesday.
Please tell me about my tickets. And finally, I was like, screw this, I got to go. But then I thought, in fairness, Hollywood Boulevard, somebody's probably done this before.
I was just gonna say,
or dressed up as the Phantom.
Right in.
So they thought I was just some lunatic from the street. I couldn't get tickets to my own show from the box office.
I gotta say, though,
it sounds
Chris,
like something Jimmy Kimmel
you
would
seem. You see, you're obviously a well-spoken person. You're a bright person. I don't really think it's the fact that it was the prosthetics. The whole idea of having the prosthetics and peeking around corners is probably what did you in.
Well,
a little more.
I will show you a picture. No one out there will be able to see it, but it will demonstrate to you.
But you'd email this to us so we can put it on our Facebook page.
We will.
That will get me fired.
Okay.
This experience alone won't first. But hey, continue. Okay. I digress.
While he's looking for that, Michael, let's do our arts calendar, shall we?
Absolutely, I would be delighted.
Okay.
Malibu Playhouse kicks off a comedy summer season Saturday, July 11th with the one-night benefit performance of A Man and His Prostate, starring Hollywood legendary actor Ed Asner. This is the first produced stage play for noted television writer-producer Ed Weinberger, who wrote this one-man comedy, serving as his new venture into the theater world. When asked what it was like working with Asner, Weinberger replied, "It's always nice being in the hands of a legend." Weinberger is perhaps best known for his hit television series, The Cosby Show and Taxi. As executive producer, his numerous series credits include A Man, Dear John, and Sparks. One of MTM Enterprises' core founders, Weinberger produced mega hits, Mary Tyler Moore Show, Phyllis, and The Betty White Show, among others, which he also wrote and created.
Ed Asner, winner of 7 Emmy Awards, 5 Golden Globes, and a multitude of other wins and nominations, is recognized for his 100-plus diverse TV and film credits. Asner is the only actor to win Emmy Awards for playing the same character, Lou Grant, in both a comedy, the iconic Mary Tyler Moore Show, and a drama, his own show, Lou Grant. Asner is also known as the voice of Carl Fredrickson in Pixar's award-winning animated film Up. A Man and His Prostate. A man late in life discovers his inner self in more ways than one. A near tragedy actually experienced by the writer is masterfully transformed into a comedy by Weinberger and perfectly portrayed by Mr. Asner. The show will play for one night only as a benefit for the Malibu Playhouse. Tickets and information are available at MalibuPlayhouse.org. I believe that is the 11th of July.
It is, Saturday, July 11th.
And Ed Weinberger is a fine man. I worked with him doing a television show called Good News that he produced, where I was a motorcycle cop in that. And he was a fine man, and I enjoyed working with him.
And, you know, I just interviewed Mr. Asner for Broadway World TV, which, of course, you know I do out here on the red carpet. And boy, oh boy, what a sweet man he is. And
he is.
He's been on our show.
He's been on our show, yes. Yeah. Talking about his when he was doing the... it was the FDR thing.
Yes, the FDR Out of the Valley Performing Arts Center.
No, no, it was a benefit to save Pasadena Playhouse. Remember when they were having financial trouble? That was
He might have done it there as well.
I think
well,
he did it there as well.
But he did it out at the Valley
Performing
Arts
Center. A fine man.
He is indeed.
Michael, would you introduce this lovely lady to my right so we can continue
indeed.
On talking Phantom?
I will. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, her theater credits include The Most Happy Fella, Titanic, most interesting show, one of my favorites, The Mikado, Jekyll and Hyde, and Wonderful Town. She recently performed the role of Cosette in Les Miserables at the St. Louis Muni alongside Norm Lewis. What a great talent
great
he is.
Guy. Yep.
And Hugh Panero. She is a recent winner of the Okay, I'll say you say it so much better. Say it again. She is. Wait, I'll give you the cue.
Now you know why you got her intro.
She is a recent winner of the
Lise Monet
Award for her performance at the 2014 La Delegna competition. But she's here today to talk about the newly reimagined version of Phantom of the Opera and the iconic role that she portrays of Christine. Please welcome Katie Travis.
Hey,
Katie.
Oh, man.
I love that.
Boy, he just kind of jumps in.
Jack's after your hair.
Yeah, I love that.
Holy
okay.
cow. Katie, hey. Katie, you were amazing. Really.
Thank you.
Just a beautiful voice and a beautiful performance. And,
thank you.
As I said, thrilling. I really, the hairs on my arm just... stood up that night when
good.
I heard your voice.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. I'm glad somebody else besides my mom
has does hair. Does she have hair on her?
She must, a little, I guess.
She does now.
Oh, sorry, Mom. She's
well, you don't
actually.
See it because of the tattoo.
Oh, right.
But anyway. But, Katie, you know, I'm curious about, Katie, you probably get this question all the time, but what was it, do you have opera training? Because your voice is operatic. I mean,
yeah. So my training is in opera. Actually, I was... tallying the years and probably about 15 years of training and 10 to 15 years in opera. I studied opera in school. I went to Central Michigan. I followed college there because of a teacher. And then I studied in Florence for a little while with a program there. And then I moved to New York and sort of transitioned into the more classical route through musical theater. But I was always doing kind of operettas and smaller opera companies in New York while I was there. So most of my training is in opera, and then I kind of did some serious acting training when I moved to New York.
It's really apparent, with your vocal skills. But one of the things that I enjoyed so much about your performance was that it was a lot of the times when you see someone who has an instrument like yours and has to bridge that gap. And because at the end of the day, it's a musical, it's
sure.
not an opera. That there wasn't that disparity between that it was matched and it fit. It
sure.
fit beautifully. And
sure.
I don't know if
my acting teachers will be very happy to hear that. Thank you.
But no, it was stunning for me too. I think Michael, we talked about it. I've never seen. I'm one of nine people who hasn't seen the show before,
yeah.
So I had no idea what to expect, and was especially I'm a big Rice, Andrew Lloyd Webber fan, and I don't know why I didn't expect it, because the title of the show is
sure.
Phantom of the Opera.
Sure.
But it was still just like, oh, okay. The vocal bar is a little raised in this
yeah.
from his other
yeah,
stuff.
It's huge. Yeah. And to do the show every day, yeah. there's a component to that, and it changed my life when I got this show, because everything is sort of about like eating healthy, making sure I have enough water, sleeping mm-hmm. next to humidifiers, being like a total vocal nerd about how my voice is doing kind
right.
of at all times. And I think, Chris, you could probably
yeah.
say it's similar. And, and even being like in loud places for dinner, your life is changed because your voice is your
yeah.
job.
People wonder why it's 80 degrees outside and you still have a scarf on. It's because you got to keep it protected.
Sure,
keep your,
sure.
No, I found that too, especially because you're on stage so much. People
yeah.
don't realize about just the physical mechanics, of doing a show, that you have to eat a certain way. You have to
sure.
you rest a certain way.
It's 2 hours and 15 minutes for Christine on stage time.
Yeah. The joke of it is that it could be called the Christine of the Opera. Because the Phantom is, he lurks like... off stage for a whole lot of the show, and Christine's out there dealing with repercussions.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of ironic. Essentially, the only time I leave the stage is to change clothes. And I have an amazing dresser, Kate, who does all of that for me. So it's lovely. I get off the stage, and she gets me naked and puts on the clothes, and we then I run back on and do it all again.
And some spectacular clothes they are.
Oh, my goodness. Just, they're amazing, right?
Yeah.
Some brand new things they just made, and it's so exciting. And what's actually cool is in each of the costumes, there's little tags of different people who have worn the costumes, different Christines before
and
you.
And they're the same names that are written on the cupboard backstage.
Well, sure. I mean, some of them, yeah. And so it's cool to know who had it before you. And then also, like, I just got a new masquerade dress, and so I'm the first name in that tag, you know? So there's something neat about
the
history of this show in general and the people who have done it before you and the people who will do it soon, you know, after you. And that's exciting to be a part of that history.
Well, especially with a show like this that shows that is not only has the longevity of being around since 86, but also shows no signs of stopping.
Sure.
I mean, there was no sense in watching this of sort of like, oh, isn't it nice that they unearthed this old chestnut? It's a little bit of a nostalgia thing. There's none of that at all.
Sure. Especially with this new production.
Yeah.
You know, we've really tried to make it as real as possible. And you know, especially from a female perspective, it's less about sort of being in a trance and having all these men decide what happens to you, but more about her choosing to, you know, it's an unfortunate situation she's in a couple different parts of the show, but it's about her making that choice. And sometimes we make these choices that put ourselves in these wacky situations. Maybe
she's
not having a man with a mask chase you around, but like,
but
you know,
she's steering her own ship
exactly,
a little more.
Exactly.
Because,
and that's what we do in our lives. You know, we make choices, and sometimes they're great, and sometimes we get stuck, and we have to figure out how to get out of that. And
what is the? Let me ask you something about how do you feel about heights? You having any issues with heights?
It's a great question. Actually, I've become more desensitized to it during this show. I went skydiving. I've done like a lot of like mountain climbing and stuff in my life. But I will say, when we first were up at the top, not to give anything away, but there's a new little change, and we have a big staircase that we're on top of.
Stunning piece of scenery.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's one of my favorite changes that we've made. But you know, the first few times were a little scary, and it's totally safe, and we're fine, and there's so many people who are at the top of their game that are controlling us and watching and making sure it's safe. But with that being said, it is a little scary, and when you can look all the way down and see like the orchestra pit, so it's not even just the audience members, but it's also the orchestra pit.
I don't think audience members really realize how high up you are.
Yeah.
Because I think that they see the massive piece of the scenery, and they just sort of, because that basically fills the proscenium, and people are, you know, a lot of people are just, it's looking at it like it's a movie or something.
Sure, sure.
It's like, no, they're probably about four stories up.
Well, you know how I know they don't know we're that high? Is because you can see them rattling their chip bags on their cell phones.
Oh, really?
So, it is an opportunity for us to look down and be like, let's see what this audience
is on their phone now.
So does that actually cross your mind when you're up there?
No, I mean, but sometimes you
never look, for me, I'm always in character.
Right.
Unlike Katie, apparently.
But occasionally you look down and there's like random pockets of light, and you're like, that's a person.
People have no knowledge.
Well, I think also that it's like one of the, it's a moment where they might be seating latecomers.
Exactly.
But it is, like, of all people, you shouldn't miss any of this show, because this is the descent into the Phantom Slayer is what we're talking about. It's a very famous sort of bit of staging in the original, and this is completely new. And what you're referring to is the staircase that comes out of a wall with no railing, and we're four stories up going down this thing. And it is something that is sort of on, it's a crazy bit of restaging, and so these people are missing out if they're late.
Well, in my defense, I was doing really well at Angry Birds.
Oh, good for you.
Okay.
So I just
important. It's really important.
What I love is that people have no consciousness of the fact that they're basically holding a flashlight at their face,
illuminating,
and they're just like, "Oh, how'd you know it was me,
moron?"
Right.
It's, I mean, you and I, it's our personal bugaboo.
Exactly. Exactly.
The best, the most surprising thing about audiences do, not all, but some, is the race to the bathroom and like the real athleticism and high stakes that that is the bathroom line at intermission.
Yeah.
And so if you haven't seen the show, or you don't even need to know the show, the chandelier gets shot down at intermission. This is a very famous moment. Right. I'm up there shooting down the chandelier, and I see people running to the bathroom, looking back to like try to see the chandelier. Oh, that's nice. But I'm going to be first in line in that bathroom. And I'm like, y'all just wait just 10 more seconds.
Because as we all know, I paid however much for my ticket so I could pee first.
I'm going to pee first.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's really, really funny. Yeah, funny.
You know, I want to ask you something that I asked you off air right before we started the show about the casting process.
Sure.
And also elaborate. I'd like you to elaborate on that here for our listeners. And also, even the understudies, do they go through the same process?
Yeah.
So tell us about the whole thing.
I mean, everyone's process is a little bit different, truthfully, depending on how long the search was for the particular role or what it may be. For me, I had started going in for Phantom a couple years ago, both on the Broadway company and the tour, and the timing just wasn't right. You know, I would get either appointments with my agent. I was also non-union for many years, so I would go to the auditions, wait all day, and never get seen because I wasn't a member of the union yet. And then, you know, finally I had an agent who got me appointments, and over a couple years of going in, and I think after it all was said and done, probably 10 times total that I was in for Phantom, I finally got the job. The final audition was... it was over an hour, and it was taped. And I was saying, little did I know that the tape was being sent to Cameron McIntosh and to Andrew Lloyd Webber and to all the London folks and the Broadway folks. And so I'm glad I didn't know that. I probably would have been a little more terrified. Mm-hmm. However, you know...
Did you have to sing from the score?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Sing from the score and then do the scene. I mean, it was basically most of the show, you know, the peak points of the show for Christine, because, you know, they need to make sure that you can sing it and act it and the whole thing. And so I say that my story is really that of, you know, I actually, right before I got the job, I was working a temp job at 6 in the morning with my friend shuffling papers. And because I had worked a bajillion jobs, as Chris has as well. And I said to my friend, you know, I think, like, I gotta let Phantom go. Like, I don't think it's for me. I think it's, I've tried too many times and I've, like, really put my stakes in, and I don't know if it's for me. And then I got one more appointment to go in, and that was when I got the job. So, you know, and the summer right before, I had been working, like, 70 hours a week, and I told my parents, like, I don't know if I can do this much longer, you know, and, I think it's a story of perseverance in some ways. And if you know deep down that you're right for something and that something is what you feel in your heart is your dream, then you should really work at it and keep going.
What was that phone call like, getting that phone call? Was it your agent who alerted you?
My agent called me, and I was nannying. I was walking a little girl across the street, and I got a call from my agent, and I saw that it was him, and I was like, I have to answer this because it could be what I think it might be. And so I answered, and... You know, he said that you got the job, and I was like, I got Christine, and he was like, yeah, you're gonna play Christine. So I started crying, and this girl thought I was nuts. She's like, 8-year-old girl, I'm walking across the street, I'm just crying. She's like, why are you crying? I was like, well, you know, if there's anything, when I was your age, I had a dream, and it just happened for me, and you know, it doesn't happen for everyone. Wow. And it was the first show I ever saw when I was 4 years old, and I said that I wanted to play Christine, and it didn't happen right away, and I wondered if it was ever going to, and it did, and it was pretty special.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris, your process, any similar to that?
I love Katie's story so much, because it's incredible. I lived in New York I lived there for 2 years before I got my first record deal, doing multiple jobs, and... my wife was in music theater, and I know I appreciate the whole process that is those cattle calls and the perseverance, and I just think it's incredible, so I love Katie's story. I had just finished my symphony tour and had just done a job in Canada with Hugh Panero, who played Phantom for multiple years on Broadway, and he sang, and Liz Calloway, who's another Broadway actor, and Hugh was doing, he sang Music of the Night, and I grew up loving Phantom. It's always been, you know, a dream of mine to play him, and so I sat back and I was like, gosh, I really... It like brought it back for me watching Hugh sing Music of the Night. So I came back to LA and I asked my agent if ever there was an opportunity to audition for Phantom and get on stage back doing acting again, I would love to do it. And a couple weeks later, they announced auditions. I was called in here in LA for Raoul. So I prepared all the Raoul stuff and went to, what is this, in Burbank, whatever that silver... Screen, whatever.
Oh, yes, yes. Screenland.
Screenland. Uh-huh. So I go into Screenland, and they stop me in the middle of my audition, and were like, you're a Phantom. Can you sing Music of the Night? So then I sang Music of the Night, and then got called back for New York and did the similar thing that Katie did, the work session. So you walk in, and you have a panel of 12 people. It's all the casting directors, the director, Lawrence Connor, the music director, John Rigby, and then the producers, and they you basically do the show for them and have a work session, and they're directing and tweaking, and it's so exciting and fun because it's you get to see what could potentially happen if you get this job, and working with Lawrence is such an amazing experience. And so I heard other Phantoms warming up, and I was like, they were fantastic, and I kind of did my job and left not really thinking anything of it because I know I appreciate everybody's talent. And then when I got the job, I was like, oh, well, that happened. So,
but how amazing, too, that the workshop thing that you're talking about, that you have so a little more of a say on your own audition than you normally would. Because so much of the time, it's just sort of like, go in, do your thing, which, of course, I'm sure was the first steps of the audition process.
Yeah.
But it's nice to hear that you have at least a little time to be directed. And
you'd get directed, and it's it's a real opportunity to sort of make a personal impression and leave your mark as a person, not as a character.
Right.
And additionally, to like take your time to receive the notes and process them, and not, at least this is for me, and I know that you do the same, is to not be rushed and to sort of, okay, if they're making an adjustment, let's just like take 30 seconds and let that sink in, and then we'll do it again. And
also to illustrate to them that you can be directed.
Yeah.
That you're not locked into.
And this is a production that... that directs, I mean, a lot, because this is an institution. So they definitely don't just like put us out there and say, see you later. They're very involved. And so it's a constant tweaking process with this show.
Wow. Amazing as it all is and what they have to go through. But let's tell them how they can buy tickets again. And that's very simple. It is playing on stage at the Pantages Theater in the heart of Hollywood, the beautiful Pantages Theater, through August 2nd. And it is Tuesday through Friday at 8 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., Sunday at 1 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. And there are performances left, but we encourage you to hurry up and get your tickets because they're selling like wildfire. And they start as low as $29.
I know. It's unbelievable. That's not
the beauty of theater.
That's not parking in New York.
Yes.
No.
It's not. I know.
And also the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. HollywoodPantages.com. You can get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com or simply call 800-982-2787. And or you may call the theater directly at 323-468-1768.
And you can go across the street to Delphine's and ask for Jeremy, the bartender, who pours a great martini. I had one before I saw the show. And nice guy, and a great place to get a little snack.
He slip you a five for that?
No, he didn't. We always go there, and I always like to support places that have good service and good food. And I was really impressed by that.
Awesome. Well,
or you could go to a Frolic Room right next door.
Oh, my gosh.
Just have a, you know,
frolic away.
Bartender
frolic
with
away.
Fresh stitches.
We need
in
to
his
baptize
head.
You now.
Okay, yeah, here we go. We only have 3 minutes. An onstage mishap, a tale of woe from performing.
Sure.
Katie, you want to start?
So on my first week, it was like my third show or so, and there's a big, elaborate reveal of Christine during Think of Me, and she goes from being the chorus girl to having this beautiful gown. And the way it happens is this changes on stage, so it's pretty quick. And there's a piece of the costume that I pull off, and then there's a woman, Christy Morton, who comes and helps put it on for me, right? The big skirt part of the gown. And so I pull off the thing, and it got caught on my other costume, and so we were pulling, and we couldn't get it apart. So we didn't, it's very fast, maybe 30 seconds, maybe. baby, and so she puts on the skirt, and there wasn't enough time to fully snap the back of the skirt before the big reveal. Otherwise, she would just be standing there putting on my skirt during this huge reveal. So I go out, and I'm like, well, we're just going to go for it. So I go out, and I'm standing there singing the whole thing, and at one point I do like a little turn, and you know, I'm like living it, and I feel like in my head, I'm like, this is going so well. And I go to do the turn, and I hear a woman gasp in the front row, and the back of my skirt had just totally opened up. And luckily, I wear like a leotard, so it wasn't like a huge exposed buttocks. But I was wearing
a
leotard.
That's so English. Buttocks.
Yeah. And like anyway, the back of my skirt was undone. And so when
modesty
I do the big cadenza at the end, I held up the skirt and just
so finished.
So
people got their money's worth.
Oh, they did. Oh, yes.
Oh, well, we don't have time for Michael's take on that, but he has a similar story. But Chris
man.
I was trying to think. Well, I've had a few, but since we're both here, at the end, do you remember when Christine hugs Phantom at the end to finally show her love, and I push away because I realize what I've done? Katie's enormous wig had gotten caught in my chest button, like on my vest. So I tried to push her away, except that her face was stuck to my chest. And we were like, oh, what do we do? Because it all goes quick from this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think what happened was I started like yanking your weave, basically.
And then you ripped off the button.
Oh, I ripped the button off.
You ripped the button off.
I had to rip your hair out of my
vest. Because anyone, and a lot of listeners might not know, but the wigs in these shows, it's not like, oh, well, it's a little wisp of hair.
No.
It might as well be Velcro.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That was something. Yeah. She basically was, you had your cheek stuck to my chest.
Yeah,
it was pretty weird.
Pretty funny.
Live theater.
That is theater.
What a pleasure having both
Absolutely.
Of you on.
Not
only
thank you so much.
Be able to see you earlier in the week, but to meet you, and you're such sweet people, and we're so grateful
Absolutely.
That you took the time with your crazy schedule to be. And of course, Benny Aguayo, our friend who is always here to help
it's
us
a
with
class
these
act
wonderful
at that
guests.
Theater, Mr. Benny Aguayo.
And last but not least, a shout out to Michael Gattuso, who's going to be watching the show for the 31st time.
Wow.
One of the big Phantom fans out there.
And there's somebody that you know that knows Paul.
Jen Ray. My wife produced one of her plays.
Yes, The Solstice at the Hudson Theater.
That's
and
right.
One of my greatest friends in the world, Jen Ray.
Yes, she's
and
a sweetheart.
Our listening audience will know her as being Nancy from TV's The Middle.
That's right.
Patricia. She's hilarious on that show.
Yes, lovely
so,
woman.
Thank you guys once again.
What a pleasure.
Thank you, and
yes,
thank you for
indeed.
Coming
You're
to see
here.
The show.
Yeah.
We really appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Right.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Paul.
Michael, we'll see you next week.
As you bet, on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohleff right here on LA Talk Radio.